The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
The left has gone from loving Comey to hating him, accusing him of violating the Hatch Act, demanding his resignation, and now they're in love with him. Likewise, the right went from hating Comey during the Clinton email sham investigation to loving him for writing the letter, and now hating him. Okay, I just can't keep up with it anymore. I'm not going over the cliff with the rest of humanity. What's the truth? What is really going on with Comey, the White House, Clintons, the Republicans, the Democrats, and is it worth paying this much attention to? Let's find out together. We begin there right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Here's the lesson that we're supposed to get. You're supposed to love Comey until you don't, and then you're supposed to hate him. The media has made a fortune pouring gasoline on a dumpster fire, and the Comey fiasco is a microcosm of why we hate both sides and the media. Okay, let me go through a couple of things. Is it Comey's fault? Is it Comey's fault that Hillary Clinton set up a private server? No. Is it Comey's fault that Democrats nominated a candidate under FBI investigation? No. That Loretta Lynch got on a plane with Bill Clinton? No. That Hillary Clinton's emails ended up on Anthony Weiner's laptop? No. Did Comey control any of those factors? No. The question is he responsible for the actions that he took because of those? The answer is yes. Did he make the right decisions? Well, let's go to Rosenstein. This is Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general. The director was wrong to usurp the attorney general's authority July 5th, 2016, and announce his conclusion that the case should be closed without prosecution. It is not the function of the director to make such an announcement. The FBI is never empowered to supplant federal prosecutors and assume command of the Justice Department. There is a well-established process for other officials to step in when a conflict requires the recusal of the attorney general. Okay. That's a compelling case. Unfortunately, that's not the case that Donald Trump has been making, because Donald Trump has been leading the bandwagon on the right, as Hillary Clinton has been leading the bandwagon on the left, of musical chairs. The little game of, I love him, I hate him, I love him, I hate him, fire him, keep him. We've all switched sides about 400 times. I refuse to do it. The question is, why now? Now, the press is making a big deal about Clinton and William Sessions in 1993 and Nixon. Okay, first of all, Sessions was not investigating anyone on Clinton's staff for colluding with a foreign government. Is it fair for the left to compare Trump to Nixon and the Saturday Night Massacre? No. Here's why. Nixon was trying to shut down a special prosecutor who was leading a criminal investigation into Nixon himself. Did Comey suddenly become a special prosecutor heading up the counterintelligence division of the FBI? Not to my knowledge, he didn't. But that doesn't stop people like Adam Schiff going on Anderson Cooper last night claiming Trump was impeding a criminal investigation. There is no criminal investigation. There are so many exaggerations on both sides of this. How do we even know where to even begin? You want to talk about fake news? It is happening in real time on all channels, left and right. Here are the facts. Trump is not currently the subject of a criminal investigation. Comey revealed to the House Intelligence Committee back in March that a counterintelligence investigation was going on, looking into ties with members of the Trump campaign and Russia. A counterintelligence investigation, however, is not a criminal investigation. It means there's some serious spy versus spy stuff going on. To see if there's anything going on that's criminal, you have that investigation. But think about that. Why would Comey even reveal the presence of a clandestine counterintelligence investigation? Don't they always say, I can't answer that question, Senator, because there's an ongoing investigation? Why reveal the ongoing investigation? This would be like on the show of the Americans if the FBI suspected two Soviet spies, and then they announced on the news, oh, by the way, we suspect maybe a husband and wife living in the suburbs, they might have a couple of kids. You wouldn't do that. The spies would all go underground. So why did Comey release the information? Also, if you think Trump did this to avoid an investigation, why did he do this knowing full well that Andrew McCabe would step in as the interim director? He's a Clinton guy who had been called out during the Clinton email scandal for conflict of interest. Do you really think that McCabe is going to shutter the Russian collusion case? I think he's going to speed it up. So I'm going to break with the hysteria today. And honestly, we've been talking about this all last night and this morning. I don't know what the hell Donald Trump was doing. I have no idea. Is it possible to be both critical of James Comey and at the same time suspicious of what Trump's motives are for firing him? Can we all agree that Comey was put into some seriously impossible situations? Yep. That he had to open a federal investigation on a candidate running for president. The Democrats, yes. Historically, the investigation into a currently running candidate, unprecedented. He also had to deal with criticism from both sides on how he was handling it all. Then he had to deal with the Russian cyber warfare that was being used to influence a presidential election and investigate to see if the president-elect was complicit in all of it. Here's the problem. He screwed it all up. These were historic problems, and he was historically bad at dealing with them. Now, on the other hand, why? Why did Trump fire Comey in this manner at this time? Comey was speaking to a room full of FBI agents and saw the news that he had been fired on the back wall TV. He wasn't asked to step down over the phone. He wasn't read his termination letter. If the reasoning behind his firing was the way he handled the Clinton email scandal, why wasn't he fired on Inauguration Day? And if he handled things sloppily, wouldn't you make sure that his firing was not? Why did they wait so long? Are we in a constitutional crisis? No. There's nothing out of bounds with what he did. There is a lot of questions. It was handled really poorly. I'm not comfortable with it. He opened himself up to serious questions. Why did he do this now? If he and his campaign are completely innocent of collusion with Russia, wouldn't it be smart to let the investigation run its course and then fire Comey afterwards? This isn't easy, and it's fair to be critical of both Comey and nervous about what Trump is doing here. But I suggest you don't take sides, because we have absolutely no idea what the truth is here. Just something isn't right. But something hasn't been right in America for how long now? At least the last 10 years. We've been headed down this road. What we need to do is keep our heads. What we need to do is not go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. not to blindly knee-jerk support Donald Trump and not to blindly knee-jerk support the left. They're both wrong. They both, I mean, do you really think that if Hillary Clinton were in office and she did this, do you really think that they would, the press would be saying anything other than, what are you kidding me? She's just trying to restore integrity to the FBI.
That's all she's 100%, doing.
100%. That's what they'd be saying.
It's fair for everyone in the audience and everyone in the conservative media, however, to ask themselves the opposite question, which is if Hillary Clinton fired the FBI head who was involved and there were investigations swirling around, would you be saying the same thing you're saying today?
Correct.
I hope the answer, and I assume in the answer of this audience, is yes. But I mean, that is a fair question to ask yourself as this goes on, because if Hillary Clinton did this, I think there would be a lot of criticism about
that. If Hillary Clinton did this, we would be screaming for impeachment. And when I say we, I mean the right.
The right generally.
The right generally would be screaming for impeachment. Because we know she's dirty. Well, that's what the left thinks about Donald Trump. What do you say we let investigations prove that to be right or wrong? Now, the problem with it is, I mean, I think this is a bone-chilling message that the president is trying to send people. I mean, look at what is Comey done? Comey went out and he was praised by this president relentlessly.
First, he was bashed because he came out and did the press conference. Mm-hmm. And he was very critical of Hillary Clinton and the way she handled the email scandal. Basically said no person in her position could possibly have done this more incompetently. So he was very critical, but didn't bring up charges. So Trump was pissed off that he didn't get the charges. The left said, well, we didn't like how critical he was, but, you know, it was the right decision. And everyone on the right said, well, I can't believe they didn't charge him. Then he releases the letter. And he releases the letter. And then Trump is like, well, he turned this thing around. It was incredible. He did a great job. The left thought it was the worst thing in the world. Now we've again switched places, I guess, again. I seriously have lost track because you're right. The left has been calling for his firing for weeks. There's a great clip.
Look at what Hillary Clinton said last week.
Yeah, go to the Blaze right now. There's a clip from Stephen Colbert's show last night in which Colbert comes out and says, this just broke. James Comey has been fired. The crowd, liberal, cheers wildly. Because they haven't done the calculus yet that they're supposed to switch positions. So they cheer wildly, and then Colbert has to correct them and say, actually, oh, what, they're a bunch of Donald Trump fans? And then they start booing later on in the same segment.
Unbelievable.
Perfect microcosm of our society today. And Colbert helped pull that one off. Because you know what Colbert would have been calling for if he hadn't been fired? Colbert would have been on the air saying he needs to be fired. And the same thing happens on both sides of this. You get to that point where you watch these things happen and you just want no part of them. You just don't want to be associated with these arguments because they don't mean anything. Yep. Both sides have decided that the words we speak have no value. It just doesn't matter. I mean, again, you know, you could say this on the left, and it's happened a million times. We pointed out a million examples of it, Colbert's audience being the most recent. But, I mean, watch Kellyanne Conway doing the interviews today. She acts as if it is insane. It's an insane standard to hold Donald Trump to anything he has said 60 seconds before the moment she's talking. It's crazy. How can you are you talking about the campaign? As if the campaign was in the 1700s. The campaign October 28th was this letter. The comments that Donald Trump made, you can say a million things about them, but I mean, to act as if it's insane to bring them up is it's as if the language has lost all value.
It has.
And it has.
It has.
There's no standard to this, you know, whatsoever. And on both sides of it, because the Democrats are 100% guilty of this, obviously, as well. But I mean, I think the audience knows they're guilty of it. We should also point out, though, that, I mean, like Kellyanne Conway is going on these shows today, and The things she's saying legitimately make no sense. The arguments made by Trump to fire Comey are the things Trump praised Comey for at the time.
Okay, so, let's play this out. The argument in the letter is in the campaign. Let's play this out. I know. But here's what she's trying to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between the Donald Trump, the candidate, and Donald Trump, the president.
Yes.
The president is trying to do the things that are right for the country. That was right for the candidate, and he may have, I'm giving her extra benefit of the doubt by adding this. And you know what? There are things that you learn when you become president, and you season and mature. So, yes, while candidate Trump thought that was great, he's the president of the United States now, and he's grown in the last few months. He has reason to change. I'm giving her lots of credit. He has reason to change.
And I guess, you know, I guess if she had said that, if she had made the argument you just made, I suppose that would be something to consider. I mean, she didn't. I think you have to disregard it. I don't think she could,
because I think she'd be fired if she had.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, maybe
she's trying to tell America that.
It's very generous, but I'm trying to understand.
But
again, it goes to the point that our language has no value. If you can't depend on anything he said as a candidate, because later on he will excuse it as, well, I was a candidate, I didn't mean it, how do you elect a president? And this is, by the way, completely on both sides. This is not a Trump criticism.
No,
both sides are doing it all the time.
Both sides are doing it. They wanted Comey fired last week.
Last week.
And now suddenly we're in Watergate and a constitutional crisis. It's unbelievable.
We have won. The Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, I want to play something from Stephen Colbert. Now listen to his audience, obviously wildly liberal, anti-Trump, everything else. And they have been trained now recently to be anti-Comey because Hillary Clinton said she lost the election because of Comey, yada, yada, yada. Listen to, he opens up this joke and immediately needs to signal to the audience, no, wrong reaction. Listen.
Huge story that broke just minutes ago, like less than 10 minutes ago. FBI Director James Comey has just been fired by Donald Trump. Huge Donald Trump fans here tonight. That shows no gratitude at all.
Man.
You hear that?
It's amazing.
He has to accuse his own audience of being Trump fans to tell the rest, to tell them, don't react that way. That no, we're not happy about this. The propaganda.
It's insane.
I have thought of Paulina, that woman in Poland that if you're a longtime listener, you've heard me talk about a million times. She was one of the women that saved Jews from Auschwitz, where she said the righteous didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. Take a stand. Be consistent. How many times do we have to flip-flop on James Comey? How many times do we have to flip-flop on WikiLeaks, on Putin, on Russia? Take a stand. The earth is spinning. The poles are shifting. Don't shift with it.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, a couple of things that you need to know. Show note coming up in about a half an hour. I'm very excited and filled with trepidation to talk to. His name is Yuval Noah Harari. He wrote an amazing book called Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. I disagree with a lot of what this man says. I mean, vehemently disagree with a lot of what this man says the solutions are. But the elites love this guy. Okay, he is from Bill Gates to Barack Obama to you name it. They love this guy. And we need to at least be on the same page on what the facts are, not necessarily the conclusions,
right,
but he talks about, he's a study of human history, and he also looks at what's coming our way. He says a couple of things. Main products of the 21st century will not be textiles, vehicles, or weapons, but bodies, brains, and minds. While the Industrial Revolution created the working class, the next big revolution will create the worthless class.
Look at that.
Wait until you hear what he's saying about that. The way humans have treated animals is a good indicator of how upgraded humans will treat those who are not upgraded. Democracy in the free market will collapse once Google and Facebook know us better than we know ourselves, and authority will shift from individual humans to networked algorithms.
You've already made me put a smile on my face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his conclusions. His conclusions on how to solve these things and what's good and what's, I mean, he doesn't believe in God. I mean, I disagree with his conclusions on how to solve things vehemently, but he is a voice that needs to be heard. He's very reasoned, very logical, and you need to hear him coming up next hour. Stand by for that. Also, let's go back and start with Colbert, because this is why upgraded humans will eat non-upgraded humans. Listen to the audience last night. We're going to play two clips for you. One we've already played. Listen to it here. When Colbert first announced that Comey has just been fired.
Huge story that broke just minutes ago, like less than 10 minutes ago. FBI Director James Comey has just been fired by Donald Trump. Wow. Huge Donald Trump fans here tonight. Okay. That shows no
gratitude. What is he doing? He is teaching the audience and trying to cover for the audience and let them know, no, you're on the wrong side on this. The audience has already been trained to hate James Comey.
Right. They've been asking for him to be fired for weeks.
For weeks.
Now he's been fired.
And now they want to flip it around and call for Watergate hearings on it. Now, I can't defend Donald Trump's firing because he's been praising him for the things that he fired him for. So I don't know what the truth is. Everybody just had to switch sides. Everyone just had to switch sides. Last night, before he was fired, the left was calling for his firing and the right was saying he was a hero. This morning, the left is calling him a hero and the right is calling for his firing. It's unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. And it is why upgraded humans will eat you. Because it didn't take too long before Colbert explained it and told the audience, no. If you're against Donald Trump, you should be upset about this. Now listen to what happened.
I mean, my pulse is racing. He fired the FBI director who has said under oath that he's investigating the Trump campaign's ties with Russia. No rationale has been given yet as to why, but it came on the recommendation of Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
Oh, Jeff Sessions, red meat. What do you know about Jeff Sessions other than you're supposed to hate him?
Right. Boo! Now, wait a minute. You just cheered the firing. It came on the recommendation of the man you're now booing.
Why?
Aren't you cheering him? You just were cheering him for the firing.
Here, let me confuse you even more. The other guy that recommended it was a former Obama official appointed by President Obama. Hello.
As was Comey, by the way. It's really hard to parse, isn't it?
So here's the thing. Here's the thing, and I've talked to a couple people on Capitol Hill last night. None of them have any idea. None of them. Everyone I reached out to last night all came back with the same thing. I don't know. I didn't see this coming. I have absolutely no idea why he did it. I don't know. Pure speculation. Comey's perceived independence rattled Donald Trump. He doesn't like not knowing where people stand. You're either for him or he lives in a very black and white world. This speculation. So maybe maybe that was it. I can't trust him. I don't know where he stands. He's on one side, then he's on the other side. I like people in place. Well, that's one of the biggest reasons why he should have kept him in place. It would have made him look independent. However, he may not have liked that and just overestimated what the liberals would do. He just thought, well, the liberals are all calling for his firing, so I'll fire him and they'll like that. And that'll be, I'll get what I want and they'll get what they want and we'll all be happy. Not thinking that nobody's thinking anymore. We're just Pavlov's dogs. That's all we are. My problem with Jim Comey, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Stu. My thought of James Comey is, I like him.
I think you're the only person in the media saying that.
Yeah. Good. maybe I'm right. I like him. I think he is a guy who honestly tries to do the right thing. I think he honestly feels like he was put in an impossible position. And I'm not saying I agree with him on what he did. I think he was trying to do the right thing. If what's his name? The guy who stole all the stuff and then went over to China and Russia. What's his name?
Snowden.
If Snowden would have stayed in place and said, yeah, I'm willing to go to prison for this. That's the way I feel about James Comey. I don't necessarily agree with what he did, but I think he really honestly was trying to do the right thing. And that's coming from a guy. Did you see when he was questioned in front of the Judiciary Committee last week? Last week he was testifying and he was frank and honest and said something so damn spooky that this is why he should have been fired. This is what he said. He wants the FBI to have statutory authorization to access web browser histories without a warrant. Mm. That's what he said last week. So he's wrong, and he's possibly fatally wrong here on many things. But he at least is saying it.
Yeah,
at least is open about it. And I think he's trying to do the right thing.
He's the head of the FBI. I mean, he's supposed to want that, right? I mean,
he's supposed to abide by the law and know the Constitution.
Right. You're not surprised, though, that he wants wants more authority for their own tasks.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
Yeah, I understand that. And I think there is a point there that, you know, here's a guy who, because we're looking at the negative, right?
Yeah.
Where everybody, as far as political hacks, are switching back and forth every time he makes a new statement.
It's kabuki theater.
Right. But on the other side of that is, you know, that might be something in Comey's favor. The fact that he's instigating that reaction from political hacks is probably something he should put on his resume.
Oh, quite honestly, it's what we get in trouble for all the time. Oh, look, he's for Clinton. Oh, he's for Trump. He's not for any. Right. He's an independent thinker. And that is one thing you can say about James Comey, at least that I like. He may be wrong, but he is not playing the political game, which makes him hated and loved deeply by both sides. It just depends on which side is more powerful.
Right. So, I mean, if that's true, because I think there is an argument to be made, and this has been made by, a lot of people today who are defending Trump, and I think it's a legitimate argument, is that it's not really what you want out of the FBI. You don't want a personality.
Nope.
You don't want someone who is, the NFL famously wants owners that are personalities, right? They don't want just like some nameless, faceless company owning
the FBI,
their teams.
You don't.
They want someone who is going to be out there and have a relationship with the city. This is not what you want with the FBI. And I think partially because he just wanted to do the right thing. And I think he thought coming out and explaining fully the initial instance with Clinton in the press conference, I think he thought that it was good to give full context in the middle of an election to what happened there, which, by the way, if you remember, was very harsh on Clinton. But there, you know, he didn't believe it rose to the level of charges. So I think he did that. Remember, with the letter that he sent on October 28th before the election, he didn't do a press conference about that. He sent that to Congress. Now, of course, he knows that every, you know, people is who are politicians are going to leak that and make sure that's out there for their own particular purposes. But he wasn't necessarily specifically trying to make that into a big public moment. There is an argument to be made, however, that he's become a personality, and that's not really what you want out of that position. And therefore, it might be the right thing to move on. And I think this is something that Trump, I wish, would be able to get over this hurdle, which it's very similar to the travel ban. There's no real reason. The travel ban was, the liberals blew that completely out of proportion. It was not what they said it was at all. However, it was handled incredibly incompetently.
Oh, my gosh. This would be so different if he would have called him back to the White House and convinced him to step down like all presidents do for the good of the FBI, not handle. Everybody would have said, hey, he did a great job, blah, blah, blah. To fire him while he was giving a speech in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about that yet.
Is
but that was
nuts.
The details of that reportedly are that he was giving a speech to FBI people in the FBI explaining what was going on. And behind him on the TV, the headline started popping up that he was fired. He initially believed it was a joke, some sort of prank, and then had to be shuffled off into a private room where he was told he actually was fired. Now, there is absolutely no reason for that to go down like that. Why on earth? Again, you could, there's two sides to the arguments. It's either incompetence or he's trying to humiliate him for whatever reason. And it could be either. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we have evidence that this president does both.
Yeah,
you know, his administration is incompetent in things like this, as we have seen with the travel ban and everything else. But he also, if he perceives you to be an enemy, he loves your humiliation.
And and that's the thing here. I think you could make a legitimate argument that something to do with banning travel from terror-ridden states is probably a good idea in some way. However, the way they did it was just incompetent and awful. Same thing here, where I think you can make a legitimate argument, and the assistant attorney general does, I think, make a legitimate argument as to why Comey probably shouldn't be in this role anymore.
But that's something you call him back to the office and say, listen, we got it. We can't have J. Edgar Hoover. We can't have a personality. And you know what? You're dividing people. We just.
And the left would still say he was getting fired for these same reasons, but it just was handled
so
terribly.
Poorly.
There's no reason to do it like this. And it's this seems to be the pattern.
And again, somebody like Comey, who you do get the impression that he does love the country.
Yeah.
He's trying to do the right thing. You can disagree with him, but he's trying to do the right thing. You can't tell me the president couldn't have called him in his office and gotten him to resign. I'll bet you he could have. And all of this would have been avoided. At least, you know, the cries of impeachment. Now this, Mother's Day is this weekend, and you can still send the 100 blooms for mom bouquet from ProFlowers in time for Mother's Day. Wower with these bright, beautiful, colorful flowers. I have to tell you, I'm so distracted right now. My grandson is in surgery today, and it's no big deal, but still, he's one.
Still, yeah.
He's one. If you just keep him in your prayers.
Glenn Beck program.
888-727 back.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck program.
Hello, America. Welcome to the program. It's Trey Gowdy just Facebooked. Director Comey had a very difficult job. I appreciate his service to our country, both as a federal prosecutor and the head of the FBI. I had my differences with him on some matters, but never lost sight of the fact that he had a very difficult job and undoubtedly had access to facts that perhaps the rest of us did not. I'm thankful to his service in our country and hopeful our president will select an independent-minded person to serve as the head of the nation's premier law enforcement agency. Our justice system is the foundation of the republic. It must be respected and fully worthy of respect. If Donald Trump would have sent that and asked him to resign and then made a statement like that, we would not be having these problems. Instead, this is the termination letter. I received the attached letters from Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General of the United States recommending your dismissal as the Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I've accepted their recommendation and you're hereby terminated and removed from office effective immediately. Well, I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I am not under investigation. I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau. It's essential we find new leadership for the FBI that restores public trust and confidence. It's vital law enforcement mission. I wish you luck, Donald J. Trump.
I mean, the letters, other than the odd, I'm the perfect person and you're never going to be in trouble for anything, so that's on record. Other than that ridiculous comment, the letters were fine. It's just the way they handled it overall.
Terminated immediately is not necessary in the middle of a speech.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. Donald Trump has done a couple of things. As we spoke about last hour, he fired James Comey, and not sure where to stand on that, other than everybody switching places. James Comey, I can't switch places. I think the guy did what he thought he was supposed to do. I think it's good that he's out because he's becoming a celebrity. And the last thing we need for the FBI is a celebrity. I want somebody who is there, who believes in the Constitution, who believes in the rule of law, is not entangling themselves in politics. I hope this next director of the FBI picks up all of the investigations into what happened with Russia, what they are doing, if there's any connections in the White House, but also who is leaking the information from the last White House. We need to know all of it, both sides. We'll discuss that here in just a second. Also, Donald Trump has delayed a decision on the climate deal. What does that mean? We know that he said he was going to get out of the Paris climate deal. Now he says, well, hang on, I need some more time to think about that. Is that Ivanka's pressure? We'll talk about that. But I really want to spend some time about a book that I have been talking to you about for a while, Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. Yuval Harari is the name of the author. He's in Jerusalem. This is such an important book for the center of this country, because you feel as though you're left out, nobody's listening to you, you don't know what they're doing in Washington, you don't know what the elites are doing. This book is the book that the elites are reading, and it is fascinating. I disagree with this guy on some major fundamental issues, but this book is so important because it tells you what is coming. Are you going to be able to avoid this? Absolutely not. Technology is on the march, and it's a good thing. But what does it actually mean to you? Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. We begin right now.
Of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I want to give you some of the things we want to talk about here. The main products of the 21st century will not be textiles, vehicles, and weapons, but bodies, brains, and minds. In the book Homo Deus, while the Industrial Revolution created the working class, the next big revolution will create the worthless class. The way humans have treated animals is a good indicator of how upgraded humans will treat us. Democracy and the free market will collapse once Google and Facebook know us better than we know ourselves, and authority will shift from individual humans to networked algorithms. Humans won't fight machines or AI. They will merge with them. We are headed toward a marriage rather than a war. This promises to be a fascinating conversation. Yuval Harari, author of Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. Welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're over at, you teach history at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. You have a PhD in the subject from Oxford. And your book has now been translated into 40 different languages. You're on a whirlwind here.
Yes, I mean, it's quite surprising even for me. I mean, 10 years ago, I was a specialist in medieval military history, writing about the Crusades and things like that. And now I'm mostly talking about cyborgs and artificial intelligence and genetic engineering and things like that.
So, Yuval, I'm fascinated by your book and your perspective and point of view, and we disagree on an awful lot of things, but I don't disagree on what you say is coming, and I don't believe that the average American or the average citizen in Europe or Russia or wherever understands what's coming in the next 10 to 20 years. They have no clue how life itself is going to be transformed.
Yeah, I think this is part of the danger. We can, you know, discuss and disagree about the potential solutions, but first we need to agree about the problem. It's real, it's there. And I am very concerned there is very little public discussion of these issues. For example, if you looked at the presidential elections in the U.S., there was a lot of talk about job loss to Mexico, to China, and so forth, but almost no talk at all about job loss due to automation.
Yes.
And the replacement of more and more people by algorithms and computers and robots in the job market.
So, Yuval, I have been saying this now for a while, and I don't think people have their arms around it. When a president or a candidate or anybody anywhere around the world, a prime minister says, we're going to get your jobs back. They're not coming back. They are being taken by progress. And the great minds of the world right now are not looking on how we can get a lower unemployment number. They're looking at a world that the unemployment number should be at 100%, not 4%.
Maybe not 100, but yes. I mean, in the next 10, 20, 30 years, we'll see, for example, self-driving cars and vehicles replacing taxi drivers and bus drivers and truck drivers and so forth, and robots replacing textile workers. But it's not just manual labor. Similarly, many doctors are likely to be replaced by artificial intelligence that can diagnose disease better than any human being, because it can simply go over immense amounts of biological data about you and your entire medical history in a way that no human being has any chance of doing. So you're talking not just about manual labor, but even doctors and teachers and lawyers, some of their jobs are also at risk.
Tell me what you mean by, while the Industrial Revolution created the working class, the next big revolution will create the worthless class.
Well, the danger is that as more and more jobs are being automated, people will be pushed out of the job market, and they'll not just be unemployed, they will be unemployable. Of course, some new jobs are likely to be created, but it's not clear whether, say, a 50-year-old unemployed taxi driver or truck driver will be able to reinvent himself or herself as, let's say, a software engineer. In the past, when automation took away jobs in agriculture and then in industry, new jobs were always created to fill the gap, but people could make the transition. I mean, if you lost your job as on a farm and you moved to, say, Detroit or Dearborn and started working in a car factory, this was possible. similarly, if you lost your job in the factory and then you moved to working as a cashier in Walmart, this was also possible because you moved from one low-skilled job to another low-skilled job. But now, if the low-skilled jobs are disappearing and you have new jobs, let's say in Silicon Valley, designing virtual worlds, you're not going to be able to make the transition because you don't have the necessary training. And then we might see hundreds of millions of people being pushed out of the job market and the creation of a completely new class of economically worthless people. I mean, worthless, of course, not from the viewpoint of their mother or husband or children, worthless from the viewpoint of the economic system and of the military system.
So
if you look at the military, you see that there it's already happening. In the 20th century, the best armies in the world relied on recruiting millions of ordinary soldiers. But today, the best armies in the world rely on relatively small numbers of highly professional soldiers that need a lot of training, and they increasingly rely on sophisticated and autonomous technology like drones and cyber warfare. So militarily, most humans today are already useless. If there is a war, there is nothing to do with most humans. The same thing may happen also in the civilian economy.
So this is where, you know, my father died a few years ago, and he was in his 90s, and he was born in 1926, and he said to me right before he died, he said, son, look at philosophy. Where has philosophy really grown? Are we different as people? People, ourselves, are we different than we were, 2,000 years ago? We still are kind of fighting exactly the same things. It starts over with every generation where you have to, find yourself. And yes, we're not cavemen, but we're still the same people on the verge of going bad. And he said, then look at technology. When I was born, we didn't even consider that we could go to the moon. Technology is moving way past us, and we have to have deeper philosophical questions being asked and answered by ourselves and as a world, because it's the questions are becoming too big. And what happens is when man usually gets behind technology, and you have people up at the top that think that they are God, and you have a bunch of worthless people, things like genocide happen. How do we guard against worthless people?
Well, first of all, we need to realize that technology is not destiny, and technology is never deterministic. Some of the people who are very enthusiastic about technology, they tend to depict the future as kind of, this is the only thing that can happen. But it's never true. Every technology can be used in many ways. You cannot just stop all research in artificial intelligence or in genetics, but you can certainly influence what we will do with it. To take a similar example, in the 20th century, we had a lot of new technology, like trains and electricity and radio and television and cars. You could use this technology to create a communist dictatorship or a Nazi regime or a liberal democracy. The trains and the radio didn't tell you what to do with them. This was really up to humans and to their ethical and philosophical and political views. And it's the same with artificial intelligence and genetics and so forth. We still have choices to make about it.
But I
agree with you that philosophy now is probably more important than ever before, because we are becoming more powerful than ever before, and we need to answer some very deep philosophical questions in order to know what to do with that power.
I use this term lightly, but I'm a friend of Ray Kurzweil. I've talked to him several times, and I have said to him, and I didn't mean this as, he took it in the spirit in which it was intended. Ray, the way you answer questions about, well, don't worry, it will only be used for the good. You know, there is no death, and we're all going to be fine, and everybody's going to want to have this technology, and the worthless people, if you will, they'll want to get the upgrade, and there's nobody that's not going to want to buy into this system. I said, what makes you different than some of the really good Nazi do-gooders that were really in there saying, we're going to change the world with this, but it went awry. You know, you're blind. You're blind to this. And it's gravely concerning to me that there doesn't seem a lot of, there doesn't seem to be a lot of drive for, should we do these things? What are the ramifications of doing these things? It's man just saying, oh my gosh, we can do these things. Let's do it.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
A book that everyone in this audience should read, by Yuval Harari, Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. I warn you, there's lots of things that in it that are agonizing, especially to people of faith. He is not a guy who believes in God, and that's fine. But get through that. Pass by some of the stuff that you disagree with, because the point of this book is what is coming. And we don't have to agree on the facts of what to do about it, but this is what is coming. And you really need to understand that. A little later on in the program, I want to talk to him about what we should be doing for our children, for education, and how do we handle this. And also at the top of next hour, in 35 minutes, Mike Lee will be with us to talk about the firing of James Comey. So, Yuval, let me just restate that question that I asked you before we went into the break, and state it this way. Where is the balance between a catastrophist and a utopian? Where is the correct place to fall on this? I so love the technology that is coming, but I also have a pretty healthy fear of what it can mean.
I think it comes together. I mean, we want reality to be simple, that we have like bad technology and good technology, and it just doesn't work like that. Every technology, as I said, can be used both for good and for bad. I mean, if we take radio, because we are now on the radio, so you could use radio as Goebbels and Hitler and the communists did,
right,
in the 1920s and 30s to brainwash millions of people. And you could use radio to enlighten them and to help create a healthy democracy in which people are well informed about what's happening and in which people can view and air their opinions. So radio itself, is it a great invention or is it a terrible invention? It's neither. It depends what we do with it.
So there's...
And I think this should be the attitude towards the new inventions of our century.
So, Yuval, we have about 90 seconds here, then we have to take another quick break, then we have more time on the other side. But the problem is we're in, and I think people think this is a political left-right tension that we're feeling right now. It's a political war. I think everything is at its breaking point. It doesn't work anymore. Life doesn't work at this speed with the old structure. And so the whole thing, it's like the Industrial Revolution. It's just about to flip. And that's the underlying tension that we're feeling. But those people who are in power right now, they're going to do everything they can to grab this technology and drag us back into dusty old concepts of control that are nightmarish. Do you agree or disagree?
I think the old models just won't work. This is the one thing we can be certain about. None of the models we created in the 20th century to understand society and politics and to manage society and politics, they can't work anymore. We need something new. Yes, people will still try to grab control, but it will be a completely different kind of control, could be far more scary. Especially if, indeed, more and more control will shift away from humans to algorithms.
Okay.
And more decisions will be taken not by any dictator, but by a computer.
Okay, so let's go there. We'll take a quick 3-minute break, and then we'll come back there to What was it he said? No, it could be much, much more scary. Okay, I hadn't thought of that possibility yet. Homo Deus is the name of this book, A Brief History of Tomorrow. This is the book that every elite is reading.
The Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
The Glenn Beck Program.
So one of my communist progressive friends just wrote to me this morning. He said, this is crazy what's going on. Last night after the firing of Donald Trump, the thing that seemed so crazy was moments after the firing, everyone on both sides was expected to switch sides and have a perfectly reasoned and thoughtful statement for doing so. How true. Mike Lee will be joining us here in just a moment at the top of the hour to talk about that. And the firing, he has an interesting perspective. We are talking to Yuval Harari. He is the author of Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. I want you to talk a little bit about democracy and the free market. And you say it will collapse once Google and Facebook show us a better way to know ourselves. And authority will shift from individual humans to networked algorithms. You just kind of mentioned it there. But tell me what that means exactly.
It means that they, as they gather more and more information about us and have the computing power to analyze all that information, they can make more and more decisions on our behalf. And people will increasingly just rely on these systems to make the most important decisions of their lives. It starts to happen today with very simple things, like you want to find your way around the city. So you increasingly trust Google Maps and not your own instincts. You reach an intersection, your gut feeling says turn right, but Google says, no, I have better information, turn left. And you learn from experience to trust Google. And then very soon, you lose the ability to find your own way around the city because it's a use it or lose it situation.
So this is what...
You lose the ability.
Ray Kurzweil and I talked about this, and I said, Ray, if you can upgrade yourself, you are going to lose just remembering things. We've already done this. We can Google anything. We lose the ability to reason. We lose the ability to think. And he said, no, you'll just use that space for other things. I don't think so. For instance, I have security. I have 24-hour security. When my security is not with me, it is almost impossible for me to function outside because I've lost the sense of normal situational awareness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you lose that, and you don't realize how important just that simple situational awareness is. But it goes away.
Yeah, and the same thing will increasingly happen with more important decisions, like you need to choose what to study at college. So previously, you rely on your own feelings and on the influence of your family, friends, and so forth. But increasingly, people will just ask Google or Facebook, hey, you know me much better than my mother, and you know the university and the job market much better than my friends. So what do you say? What should I study? And it's an empirical question. If people will receive good answers, they will increasingly trust these systems until they will reach a point they can't make any important decision by themselves.
Oh my gosh.
Because they lost the ability.
And that's when we turn into pets. You tell a story about Gorbachev coming over to London, and he notices that there's no bread lines. And he asks, can you put me in charge of who's in charge of bread? Because we can't really get this working in the Soviet Union. And this is an example of the old way of doing things and the really old think of the Soviet Union. And this is kind of what you're talking about, how the information in the Soviet Union, they couldn't process all of that in a central bank. Now we can.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, you can think about it as kind of perfect communism. That there is a theory that communism in the end failed because they couldn't process all the information fast enough and efficiently enough. I mean, in order to plan, say, the bread supply for the Soviet Union, you need just so much information about hundreds of millions of people that they just couldn't do it. And the free market worked much better because it decentralized, it distributed the process of gathering information and making decisions, basically everybody makes their own minds. But theoretically, if you reach a point when you have enough information and enough computing power, you can create a central system of decision making which will actually work better than individual choices.
Okay, so now this is where we this is where the rubber meets the road. I believe that, and I believe that is almost the free market system. Almost, I mean, it is predictive in its nature. It's putting the resources where the resources need to go because it's predicting the human behavior. But at some point, where is the dog and where is the tail? And the other part is, and this is critical. You talk about that worthless class. Part of the reason why the Soviet Union failed is because you no longer had a drive to seek, to learn, to expand. And communism really took that human spark and, in many cases, snuffed it. How do we not snuff that spark?
That's a big question. I mean, and again, part of the problem is that you could preserve a creative elite. I mean, the problem is not with the elite. The problem is with the masses. The real danger, I mean, if you talk about, say, medicine, so you will always, or at least for the foreseeable future, you will need extremely creative researchers to discover new medications for cancer or whatever. But you won't need the average general practitioner, the average doctor in the front line, because you would have a much better doctor on your smartphone. And this is likely to happen in more and more fields. So creativity will be preserved, but it will be the monopoly of a very small elite.
Go ahead.
No, the big problem is what will happen to the masses. Now, in the 20th century, even in the most brutal dictatorships, the elite still cared about the masses because it needed them. Even if you look at Nazi Germany, so Hitler and the Nazis, they cared a lot about the education and health and welfare of the average German worker because they knew they will not have a strong army and they will not have a strong economy unless they have millions of poor Germans who serve as soldiers and as factory workers. But in 50 years, you won't need that because you will have all the robots and AI and so forth to fill your factories and armies.
So then how does one avoid the George Bernard Shaws of the world that say, sir or madam, line up in front of us and justify your existence because we can't afford to take care of you anymore? How does the person, how does the worthless class have access to any kind of real health care when they're not needed by anyone?
So some people say the answer will come from universal basic income, that the government will just provide them with a basic income to cover health services and basic education and then food and so forth, even though they don't work and they are not needed by the economy. This may work in a place like, I don't know, Sweden or Denmark or Switzerland, but in most of the world, especially if I think about the developing countries like Nigeria or India or Brazil or Mexico, it won't work there. And frankly, we have no idea how to solve this problem. And I think neither on the left nor on the right there is today any real political vision of where humankind will
Zero.
Be in 30 years.
Zero.
Where will humankind be in 2050? I don't hear a vision about that from anybody.
I will tell you, I've talked to people in Silicon Valley. I've talked to people on Capitol Hill. And then I've talked to people in the middle of the country. Silicon Valley is in a world of its own. It is so far ahead. And the rest of the world is... the rest of the country, from the political leaders to the baker on Main Street, they're all talking about things like the firing of Comey. Well, that might be important today in today's news cycle, but in 10 years, that's nothing. We have to be preparing for what is coming and have this real conversation and talk to the media elites. Their eyes glaze over. They don't have any concept of what you're talking about in your book.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only place you hear people talking seriously about the future of humankind is Silicon Valley and places like that. And that's very dangerous because, yes, they are very creative and very intelligent, and most of them are also, good people, good-hearted, but they don't represent anybody. And it's very dangerous to entrust the future of the entire human species in the hands of a small technological elite. Mm. And, you know, it's not a problem we can think about in 20 or 30 years. If you look, for example, at education, then this is a problem we need to think about today, because the question is, if I have a son or daughter who begins school today and they are 6 years old, what should I teach them today
so they
will have a job in 30 years? Nobody knows the answer.
But let me give you a break and come back and see if you can come up with at least somewhat of an answer. What do we do with our kids? We'll do this here in a second. Now this, by the way, the name of the book is Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow, Yuval Harari. Some of his conclusions you're not going to like. Who knows? I don't know you personally. You might love them. I had a hard time swallowing some of the conclusions, but it is a fascinating book and one that every person in this audience should read.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury. 888-727-BACK.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Senator Mike Lee is coming up talking about James Comey and what happened yesterday. Interested to hear his take on it. So we'll go to that here in just a second. We're talking to Yuval Harari, Homo Deus, a book that I think every single person in this audience should read, A Brief History of Tomorrow. It will explain what is coming. It is not a science fiction book, but boy, I tell you, and you will read it and begin to understand why I have been talking about technology, technology, technology. Everything's about to change, and change in ways that you don't even begin to understand. It's why, even though I disagree with the minimum income, it's why we've talked about it on this show and said we have to consider it. Until you understand what's coming, you won't know why we have to look at things and start to turn every stone over before our politicians, looking to blame a loss of jobs on somebody, say, you know, it's this group, that group, or it's those evil people in Silicon Valley, because they will look evil at some point. Yuval, what do we do with our kids right now? Can you give any hint as, you know, college, no college, debt, what they should study? What should we be doing?
Well, I guess most of what kids learn today in school will be irrelevant by the time they are 40 and won't help them much in the job market. The one thing they will definitely need, I mean, nobody knows what the job market will be like, and precisely because of that, the one thing they will need is the ability to keep learning and to keep reinventing themselves throughout their lives. I mean, previously, life was divided into two main parts. As a young person, you mostly learned, and then as an older person, you mostly made use of what you learned in your as a teenager or something. But in the future, you won't have this division. If you want to stay in the game, you have to keep learning and changing throughout your life.
And you're seeing
and for that, I think the most important thing will be emotional intelligence and mental balance. It will be much more important than anything you can learn in a history lesson or mathematics lesson or chemistry lesson.
So, Yuval, I'm really gravely concerned about this move of safe spaces and everything else, because our universities are now beginning to teach the exact opposite. They're beginning to teach conformity of thought, and it's the worst thing you could be teaching to this generation right now. Agree or disagree?
I completely agree. Because, again, they will need to change more than any previous generation in history. to adapt to change. And generally, people don't like that. Beyond a certain age, when you're 15, you like change. But when you're 40, you don't like it. And in the future, you won't have much of a choice about it. And if people don't learn how to stay flexible, and stay flexible not just in the body, above all in their minds, they are going to be in a very, very difficult situation. And again, talking about the job market, we don't know what new jobs will appear, but they will most likely require creativity. Anything which is routine, a computer will be able to do better than humans.
Yuval, I would love to, if you're ever in the United States, I'd love to have you come here personally. I'd love to spend some real time with you, and we'd love to have you back and delve some more into this. Your two books, Homo Sapiens and this one, Homo Deus, are remarkable, remarkable books, and I thank you for what you're doing. Thank you so much, Yuval.
Thank you for having me here, and if when I'm in the States, I'll be happy to meet.
Great, thank you. Yuval Harari, the name of the book is Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. Mike Lee is coming up next, all about James Comey.
The Glenn Beck Program. The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello, America. The world is upside down. And we all tried to, I guess we were all supposed to automatically know we were supposed to switch sides again last night when Donald Trump fired James Comey. Now we're supposed to cheer for James Comey if we were on Hillary Clinton's side. I'm trying to keep track where we were. Yes, if you were on Hillary Clinton's side, you're supposed to cheer because Hillary Clinton wanted him fired. However, because Donald Trump fired him, if you have to know that if you were on Hillary Clinton's side, you couldn't cheer because this is a way to get to Donald Trump. So now you had to boo that he was fired, which is something you cheered for in the earlier afternoon of yesterday. If you are on the right, you are supposed to cheer that he was fired, even though earlier in the afternoon you were cheering for him because he helped win the election for Donald Trump. That's the world you're living in. Or what, Stu?
So where I'm confused. Where's your problem with this? Where's your confusion?
Oh, no, I think I'm updated.
Oh, okay, because it seems like you're having a tough time understanding why that would be the reality.
No,
it seems obvious to me.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page. Mike Lee will be joining us from the Senate, and we'll discuss the firing of James Comey and the crazy world of politics. We begin right now.
Entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
When we're looking at all the people that we could have on the air today to talk about this, and you know, everybody, all the talking heads are out, all the politicians are out on both sides, we thought, let's see, who doesn't switch sides all the time? Who is not doing the calculus in their head of, okay, wait a minute, how am I supposed to answer this week? The name, of course, Mike Lee comes to mind immediately, a guy who just plays it straight the whole time. Mike, welcome to the program. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you very much, Glenn.
Senator from Utah. So tell me, Mike, what the hell is going what happened?
You know, it was a surprise to all of us. It was certainly a surprise to me. I learned about it through the news yesterday afternoon, no prior warning. In short, I think part of what happened, at least, was that Jim Comey had become the issue. And even he, I think, would acknowledge that that isn't good for the FBI director himself to become the issue. And so I think that's what happened. I don't know of the timing for the announcement. I don't know whether that was right. And I don't know where this goes from here. But I think once the issue, I think it became much more likely that they would end up making a change at the Department of Justice.
Okay, so I agree with that, that we can't have a celebrity. We can't have somebody who is polarizing in that position. We just want a no-name just to make the calls like an umpire. You know, I just want somebody in that position who's wearing the black and white stripes, and not because they're in prison, but because they're an ump. And and there's no celebrities in ump town. Here's the thing that the Democrats are using, and I'd like to get your view on this. They are in the middle of apparently some investigation of the people in his administration. Did that play a role? Was this appropriate for him to fire him? I mean, he made it very clear, Trump did, in the firing letter. You told me three times that I'm a good guy and I'm not part of an investigation. He made that very clear that this had nothing to do with that investigation. But do you know what's happening with the investigation and the grand jury possibly being called?
I don't. I have absolutely no idea. From my standpoint, that is not only unknown, but unknowable at this point. That's one of the reasons why this has gotten a lot of attention, though, is that people see an investigation going on as to Russia's involvement with last year's election, and people see the possibility or the suspicion that this might have been connected with that. Now, the publicly stated reason indicated that it was not that it had to do with management reasons.
Is there any reason, Senator Mike Lee, that this came up out of the blue yesterday and had to be fired in the middle of giving a speech? I mean, why the sudden, we got to get him out of here? Any idea?
I do not know. Some have speculated that, you know, we have a new deputy attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, and he's very well respected, and he's been in place for only a couple of weeks, just barely having been confirmed by the U.S. Senate overwhelmingly. He did make a recommendation on this, and that recommendation involves Mr. Comey's dismissal. And the fact that he's been in office only a short period of time perhaps explains some of the timing. I really don't know. But again, this wasn't run by us in advance. We had no advance notice, nor do I have any inside information as to what they had in mind. There are rumors circulating suggesting that there was a lack of trust generally between the White House and Mr. Comey. One can understand that a lack of trust generally, a lack of trust as to his willingness to be impartial, as to his ability to treat things with confidentiality during the pendency of an investigation would be of concern. But I have no idea whether any of those things.
I think that would have been the same if Hillary Clinton were in office. There would have been a lack of trust. Can you tell me anything about McCarthy, Andrew McCarthy, the guy that's coming in? Isn't he an Obama guy?
Yeah, I'm not a good witness on that at this point. I wish I could give you information on that, and I just can't.
Is there talk in the hallways today? We see Schumer out. Is there real talk in the hallways today like there was last night? We're in a constitutional crisis. This is Nixon. This is Watergate. We demand hearings. Is there a real push on the Hill for that, and will anything come about from that, Mike?
There's definitely a push to try to create the appearance of a crisis. I think that's a mistake. I think it's short-sighted at this point. If people have information demonstrating impropriety, that's one thing. But anytime you suggest a constitutional crisis, you got to be prepared to back it up with actual arguments, with actual facts that tie into actual constitutional arguments.
No, that doesn't matter.
I haven't seen those yet.
Mike, the idea that Comey had become the sort of center of attention and maybe a personality in a role where you don't want personality, and part of that is his own doing, I think. But outside of that, who is he? Is he a good guy? Did he do a good job? Taking out sort of the way the press has handled this, do you stand by Comey and the job that he did?
Look, personally really like the guy. And I've known him for more than, I don't know, what's been 12 or 13 years. He was a high-ranking Department of Justice official, Deputy Attorney General at the time I was a federal prosecutor in Salt Lake City, an assistant U.S. attorney. He came and visited our office, shook hands with each of us, got to know each of us, gave us a pep talk. He was a prosecutor's prosecutor. I mean, he told us these great stories and he explained to us, you know, if you woke me up in the middle of the night and asked me, who are you? I would tell you, I'm an assistant United States attorney. This guy knew how to motivate federal prosecutors, knew how to relate to us, knew how to explain to us that he had empathy with us, that he understood we had to see things as federal prosecutors that no one should have to see. He is a very likable human being. So, yeah, personally, I love the guy.
Was he a guy, do you believe that the, because we've heard from both sides, as both sides loved him and then hated him, that the FBI, the agents didn't like him because he was, you know, flying off the handle and there was no trust between him and the system, not above but below. Is that true, do you think?
I have heard that. I suspect some of it is exaggerated. But again, we have to remember the culture of the FBI. This is a place that has deliberately, since the days of J. Edgar Hoover, eschewed anything that looks like open, bold, partisan activity. There was a special agent in charge, I believe in Louisiana a few years ago, who was fired before lunch after he did an interview one morning in which he acknowledged that someday he might possibly consider running for public office. They had fired him from Washington, D.C. before lunch the day that happened. So that shows the culture within the FBI. They really like to eschew anything that looks political. And so this guy, having waded into the political thicket, whether wittingly or otherwise, avoidably or not, definitely ran afoul of some of that culture.
Is there any reason, Mike, to be concerned? Again, people are talking about, a dictatorship. And I have to tell you, if President Obama did this, I would be very concerned. President Trump has done this. I'm very concerned. But most people are picking partisan sides. Is there anything lasting to this that we should worry about? Is there anything that was done that kind of is sending a message to us that we should be hearing?
Well, look, this is another one of those instances where only time will tell. The White House stated plausibly legitimate, facially valid reasons for making a change. If, in fact, the Federal Bureau of Investigation is in disarray, if, in fact, it's not working the way it should, and there's been an erosion of trust there among and between agents and within the Department of Justice, then that's a problem. And time will tell, will prove out those facts, if indeed those are those facts. If, in fact, the reason was something different than that, then people will have cause to be concerned. I have no way of knowing what that will be. I normally start, when somebody gives a facially valid explanation, by assuming that that's true until proven otherwise.
So the Senate hearing that was happening, the subcommittee hearing that was happening on Russia and everything else, Mike, is a giant circus. I mean, there was nothing useful that is coming out of that at all. We're not talking about who actually leaked the information from the federal government and the White House. We think we know who it is, but nobody seems interested in going after that. And quite honestly, it doesn't seem like anybody was really interested in going after. I mean, a foreign government tried to influence the elections. And I don't care who it is, if it was Hillary Clinton, if it was Barack Obama, if it was Ted Cruz, if it was Jesus, I'd want to know what exactly happened. And I don't get the impression that anybody in Washington is really that interested in finding out either one of those questions. Am I reading it wrong?
Yeah, I think so. In this instance, I think you are. You're right most of the time, Glenn. In this instance, I think you're wrong. There are a lot of people who care very passionately about that, and including me, but by no means limited to me. People of both parties are concerned about that. Some of those investigations, some of the details behind those investigations are still classified, and so they can't be discussed. That might be one of the reasons why you're not hearing as much on that. But look, this is a big deal.
Have you been read into those classified?
Some of them, yes.
Okay.
I'm not on the Intelligence Committee, and so I don't have the highest level of access some of my colleagues have. But this is disturbing on many levels, not just because of what may have happened by virtue of the actions of other governments, namely that of Russia on our own, but also what happened within our own government. And it's also concerning given that what we see with Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act is potentially very distressing. The fact that they can record conversations of U.S. citizens, and as long as they talk to someone who is himself or herself a target of a foreign intelligence investigation, they can record that call, store it in a database, and search that database with the U.S. citizen being the target without a warrant. That's distressing.
You, I know he testified, Comey did, in front of your committee last week and was saying we need to have a statutory rule that says we can go into anybody's browser and search it at any time without a warrant. That's terrifying stuff.
It's very terrifying. The fact that he was saying that, the fact that we've got a whole lot of members of the U.S. Senate and a whole lot of members of the U.S. House of Representatives who think that that's just fine. They're pushing this thing, this proposal to give the federal government warrantless access to your browsing history, to your electronic transaction records, your search records, what you've read on the internet. That's the functional equivalent.
That is good.
Allowing the government warrantless access to your entire library, the books that you've read, you have on your shelf at your home.
But that's going to happen, Mike. There was a new survey that just came out for millennials. And 54%, I think it was, of millennials, of conservative millennials, say, yes, the freedom of speech in the First Amendment is absolutely vital, but the government needs to outline what speech is okay and what's not okay. I mean, it's an upside-down world.
Well, it is, and that's why we've got to turn it back right side up. We've got to remind people of the fact that governments are necessary. Governments can protect us. But they have to be managed. They have to be constrained because people are self-interested. Those who have power inevitably want more. We've got to protect ourselves. And to protect ourselves, we have to understand our rights and we have to understand the risks and the dangers associated with government.
Mike, I appreciate your time. I've got a book that is on my desk right in front of me because I just had this guy on, Yuval Harari. He wrote a book called Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow. You're an intellectual enough to really get your arms around this. I'm going to send this book to you. You have to read it. It's what all the elites around the world are reading, and it is the future of tomorrow. And we have to start having deeper conversations than, you know, the kind of conversations that most people are having, because the world's fundamentally about to change, and so are the world's governments. And this kind of goes into that. Mike, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
Bye-bye.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Sign up for the newsletter and get all the info you need to know at glennbeck.com. Mercury.
This is
the Glenn Beck Program.
Bye. Welcome back to the program.
What happened? I'm just because I was in the middle of something else, and all I heard during the break was something about Putin having a...
Trump met with the Russian ambassador today.
Yeah.
It was the only thing on his schedule, which is kind of obviously... It's odd timing. I mean,
yeah,
certainly everyone
bad.
Likes to...
It's just bad timing.
I don't think it has... One has nothing to do with the other, obviously.
Nope.
However, there are reports on the Twitters that...
On the Twitters.
It seems as if it was closed press for the U.S. press. So they could not take pictures of this or anything else. However, the Russians seem to be in there and are tweeting pictures from inside. So the Russian press has access, but the U.S. press does not seem to have access, which is kind of a strange.
Which is just foolish. It's not like
a good look for today.
Yeah, not. I mean, you know, when Putin allows the press in and we don't, that's just, I mean, that's just not smart. And it's not like we have to go grab a Pravda someplace. We're going to see the pictures. What are we thinking?
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Mercury. The Glenn Beck Program.
Right scoop. is reporting today Ted Cruz is trying to repeal and replace Obamacare all in one bill. Ted Cruz is now doing, according to the Right Scoop, what we all envisioned should have happened. The Washington Examiner says a member of the Senate Republican Health Care Working Group is working to build support for an alternative to the House-passed Obamacare bill, one that will allow cross-state insurance purchases, includes medical malpractice reform, health savings accounts, and the expansion of association health plans. Ted Cruz is the one doing it. He's been working behind the scene for weeks with now 13-member group of GOP senators on an Obamacare repeal and replacement plan that would eliminate the need for a second phase of legislation and replace the failing health care law. I mean, I can't imagine it's going to happen because it just sounds right. Just sounds good. And when's the last time we saw anything right or good come out of Washington? Did you know this, Stu?
No. I mean, that's a good turn of events. Seems to come from that source fairly regularly.
I believe only meaningful health care reform will be through reconciliation, said Cruz. I think the answer very simply is to put it all in one bucket. Pass everything under reconciliation requires 51 votes. He believes the provisions can be included in the reconciliation member without running afoul of the Senate rules. Every one of the reforms reduces premiums and has significant budgetary impact, and therefore, under the terms of the statute, these reforms are permissible under reconciliation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's great, right? This is the complaint we've had about this for a while. We're starting a negotiation from a losing position, which is odd, right? I mean, you're supposed
to... the problem is, you know, the GOP wants those big, huge parts. They want this big government health care plan. They're not fighting for what we're fighting for.
Right, and that's why it won't happen, right? But it's so amazing to see the reaction to these things. I mean, look at the Jimmy Kimmel thing is an interesting emotional part of the last couple of weeks of debate. Boy, Jimmy Kimmel, his son, I can't remember, he had a baby. Had serious heart issues, mm-hmm. and had to be rushed to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And the way, you know, Kimmel had a really emotional monologue he felt really terrible for him, and he discussed about these problems. But where he's landed, and again, he's been a longtime liberal, he landed on basically making this into a healthcare debate. We have to give people healthcare. How can millionaires like me have money and people don't have healthcare? And it's amazing to see this reaction. They act as if this plan the GOP has provided is the most hateful thing that has ever been done. Number one, Obamacare's only existed for a few years. Number two, it's been incredibly unpopular the entire time it's been in existence until very recently when the campaign sort of kicked into gear. Number three, the situation now, even if you went to the GOP plan, would be a far leftward move from what we had in 2008. So you're not talking about some long-time thing that we've always had, and all of a sudden you're pulling it away from them. You're talking about something that we don't have the money to pay for, is not operating at all, and is about to self-destruct, and it needs to be fixed. What the GOP is doing is not repealing Obamacare. They're trying to reform it and fix it. And they will fix it in some areas. It will hurt in other areas. But the issue here is we aren't even considering trying to fix this in a free market way.
No.
It's just how much money do we take from one group and give to the other group?
Yeah.
Democrats want to do more, and conservatives or Republicans want to do less. And by the way, we should also note that even in the fact-checking, I mean, you want to read a fact-check of Jimmy Kimmel's little rant? Mm-hmm. Get down to about paragraph 7 or 8, and what you'll see is no matter Obamacare or not, his baby would have had surgery
if he
had $0 or if he has $1 billion.
Of course.
Of course, that's left out and it's buried down at the end.
I know.
But that's always been the case.
Okay, so let me switch gears. Because I know, Stu, you follow this a lot. Donald Trump, when he was on the campaign trail, said he was not going to renew the Paris climate deal.
Yeah.
And he was very clear on that. Now we're, 30 days away from that expiring. Europe and China, are getting very nervous that we're going to pull out of it because that's what he said. Mm-hmm. He was supposed to make an announcement And then he said, you know what, I can't. And isn't his daughter over in Paris meeting with the new president right now?
She's doing something
that I can't remember. So disregard that.
She's been very involved, though.
She's very involved. Yeah. We've seen him meet with Al Gore and everybody else. Is he going to reverse himself?
They want to delay the decision. They came out yesterday and said, by the way, we're going to delay the decision on the Paris climate until after the G7.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can take that a couple of different ways, right? I mean, to me, it's disappointing because I want him out of that. By the way, I will say that I think one of the strongest areas Trump has performed in since he's been president has been EPA-type matters.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually liked most of everything he's done in that arena. The one thing I would complain about would be the Paris Accord, which he should drop out of immediately, as he promised during the campaign. I think there's an argument to be made, especially given his history and the way he's been operating since he's been president, that he may very well be holding out on this because he realizes these big negotiations and meetings are coming up, and he'd rather not just throw that away. He'd rather dangle it to the rest of the world for, I guess, something else. Now, I'm not willing to lose pulling out of the Paris Accord for any of these things that he wants to do. So I don't like that. But, I mean, it may very well be that he gets past these meetings and then pulls out. Maybe, you know, some have argued, people who aren't maybe as friendly to Trump, are saying that since he doesn't really know much about this and he doesn't want to get in arguments with people who do, he wants to be friendly with them until he's done meeting with them, then he can pull out and everything, and no one's going to question him after mm-hmm. that. He's not going to be embarrassed on the world stage, which mm-hmm. he doesn't like. I don't know, that might be a little bit too negative of a viewpoint on him. But I think, look, the Paris Accord does nothing. Even if you believe every single thing that Al Gore says, the Paris Accord does nothing. I think it's 0.03 degrees in 100 years. If it actually were passed and go went all the way, every single country actually followed the rules, which never happens. But let's just say that did occur, and every country did play along with this stupid thing. It still, even if you believe all the science and don't question Al Gore at all, does nothing. They have these things called intended reductions. I can't remember. There's a specific acronym for them that I don't have in front of me. But it's intended national reductions. Basically, what it does is they say they're going to drop their emissions by a certain amount. They intend to do so. That doesn't mean they have to do so. It just means they intend to do so. Now, how many countries are going to destroy their economies? And we're talking multiple trillions of dollars to do these things. Are you going to destroy your economy? Obviously, if you're an elected official, if you're a dictator, it's different. But if you're an elected official, you're going to probably lose your gig over this, and your party's going to lose power, and they're going to reverse this policy anyway. How many actually do it? It's wonderful to say you're in the Paris Accord, because everyone says, wow, look at what an enlightened person.
Trying to do something.
But actually doing it means you lose your job, and the rest of your vision goes away in almost all cases. And that is something that most politicians are smart enough to avoid. So these things never wind up occurring anyway. The only thing that winds up lowering emissions around the globe are, one, economic disaster. That is, you saw that with the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union collapsed, and their emissions went down. In fact, they started measuring all the world goals of emissions from 1990 because they loved the fact they could do it from that very low area where the Soviet Union was at its bottom. We saw it again in the Great Recession. Emissions went down. The other thing that happens is the free market and the economy winds up increasing over time your efficiency. And technologies wind up helping this.
I can't wait till we have an AI government so we don't have to think about all this.
Right? It would make things easier.
Yeah,
maybe we'll get a little insight on President Trump's dealings with the climate change, the Paris Accord, and maybe James Comey firing when NBC News head Lester Holt interviews him tomorrow night.
This is a weird thing that people don't realize.
Jeffy has a thing for Lester Holt.
Jeffy, I mean, it's
like he has a poster of Jeffy Holt, in his office.
Mm-hmm.
He does. He has a Lester Holt. You don't think they exist? They do.
He's the number one news guy across the board right now.
The issue here is not really necessarily Jeffy's respect for his journalism. It's that he's actually in love with the man.
No, he's a fan.
Like a stalking fan. Like, I think if he had the opportunity, would he kiss him on the lips? The answer to that is yes. Now, I don't know that Lester would like that. And I, as far as I know, Jeffy's a heterosexual, but I think he would make an exception in that particular instance.
Absolutely.
He doesn't even deny it. He does not deny it.
Let me take you to Seattle here for a second. The Seattle mayor, Ed Murray, announced yesterday he's withdrawing from his candidacy for re-election. Now, this is on sex abuse charges. There are four men who now say that he gave them money in exchange for sex acts when each alleged victim was a minor. And these minors were in custody of a counselor group home where Murray was a counselor. So it doesn't, you know, it didn't look good. He hasn't stepped down, but the sex scandal proved to be pretty intense. And he's now stepping out of the race. But there is nothing more than charges. And let me just say this. We're entering a very dangerous world. And let me be as consistent as possible. Bill O'Reilly, his life has been destroyed. Destroyed. Over what? Seriously.
Allegations.
And pretty flimsy allegations. I mean, most of them don't have anything to do. They are Roger Ailes' smear jobs, many of them. Okay? But they're still allegations. Nobody's been convicted. Nothing's happened here. He's a pariah. This mayor. There's only allegations here. There's been no trial. This guy's life is over from allegations. Is this who we are?
I think we definitely yes.
Yes.
Right? No. I mean, I think that's
it's not right.
Yeah. I mean, look. There's a reason we have a justice system. And I think that, you know, I understand that that's more it's focused on the legality and whether you're in prison or not. But I mean, the way that our public opinion shapes these things, I mean, you know, you go back again. I think my opinion is Bill Cosby is absolutely guilty of a lot of the things he's accused of.
Well, Bill Cosby is also different. Bill Cosby Bill Cosby is not Bill O'Reilly.
No.
Roger Ailes is in the neighborhood of Bill Cosby.
But again, my point, though, is a little different because you're right. That's why I'm bringing Cosby up because he's an extreme example here.
Yeah.
But Bill Cosby essentially is a pariah from society because a comedian had a rant about the allegations against him. The allegations were there for a long time, but a viral rant from a comedian wound up pushing this into the thing that it now is.
No, I don't think it's that. I think it's more insidious than that. I think it is Bill Cosby had spoiled his welcome by speaking the truth to the African-American community and fell out of protective favor from the system. He also wasn't Bill Cosby anymore. He started to be more regular Joe, you know, he wasn't that all-powerful media guy.
I think that those are the circumstances that led to that rant why it went viral. So
correct.
I think we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
The point is, though, that some little pop culture thing can do that. It might very well be a positive development, right? Like if Bill Cosby is guilty of these things and people weren't focusing on them, thank God that this happened. But it's like it's a weird thing without a conviction to let these things happen unopposed.
Amen.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, so let me recap on where we were last night. This is how confusing things are in America. You don't know which side you're supposed to cheer for now. Here's Stephen Colbert last night.
Huge story that broke just minutes ago, like less than 10 minutes ago. FBI Director James Comey has just been fired by Donald Trump.
No, wait. No, liberals, you're not supposed to be happy.
Huge Donald Trump fans here tonight.
Yeah. No, they weren't. They just didn't get the read yet on which way they were supposed to react. But he took care of that later. Some breaking news now, and this is, you know, this is very sketchy, but it's coming from the New York Times, so take it for what it's worth. Here's the latest on the Comey.
And they're saying Comey, days before he was fired, he asked the Justice Department for a significant increase in money and personnel for the investigation into Russia. This is going to be the alternate argument.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. Mercury.